Welcome to another edition of the Cyclone Fanatic Saturday Podcast. As always, the Saturday Podcast is brought to you by our friends at Iowa Pork. Austin Hurst, do you like Iowa Pork?
I love Iowa Pork. Who doesn't like Iowa Pork?
Yeah, if you don't like a good Iowa pork chop on a hot summer day in central Iowa, I don't know what kind of person you are, but you're not someone that I ever want to associate with.
You're no friend of mine, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's for sure. It's a beautiful Memorial Day weekend here. Enjoy a little bit of Iowa pork during your three-day weekend. Saturday Podcast. What's up, my man?
Not much, man. Just enjoyed that game the other night. That was a good one in Houston, game five. Excited to talk a little hoops.
Yeah, you're making your second appearance on the Cyclone Fanatic Podcast.
That is correct. I'm honored. I'm honored that you guys had me back after the first one.
We're going to talk about some NBA stuff, talk specifically about the Western Conference Finals going into Game 6 Saturday night, talk a little bit about the all-NBA teams, and then some NBA draft discussion at the end as well. First of all, you've been a Cyclone Fanatic contributor for like 5 months, and now I think this is the longest that anybody's ever gone between the being named a contributor, as Chris named you on a night in Memphis, to now like getting your first start.
Yeah, I think there's probably a lot of people doubting that I would ever actually contribute to this website, but I'm great to be here, and I'm excited to chat it up about some hoops.
We've had like probably 20 different ideas that we talk about, and it's like, yeah, we just gotta find time to do this, and then we never find any time to do it. It's just one thing after another.
Yeah, that's correct. But I guess the important thing is we're both here now, and we're after 5 months.
Yeah, there we go. We're ready to roll.
I think the people are ready for it.
All right, so going into Game 6 tonight, obviously Houston has a 3-2 lead, but Chris Paul will not play tonight for the Rockets after sustaining a hamstring strain in the closing moments of Game 5. I mean, what kind of impact do you think that's going to have on the Rockets?
I mean, obviously, I think it's huge. He made some huge shots the other night that they really needed, and just his leadership and, you know, just obviously, I mean, you've seen it too. You know, Houston's game plan has just pretty much been to attack Steph Curry off the dribble.
Right.
You know, whether that be Harden, whether that be Chris Paul, you know, kind of whoever gets that matchup is kind of who they're attacking in the half court. And just, you know, obviously having one of your best players out is huge. So I'd be very surprised, you know, if Golden State just doesn't take advantage of that.
Yeah. Well, and I think too, I mean, this is going to put a ton of pressure on some of the role players for Houston. And that's really the big difference between Golden State, where you lose a guy like Andre Iguodala and you've still got Kevin Durant and Steph Curry and Draymond Green and Klay Thompson to pick up some of your slack. You lose a guy like Chris Paul and all of a sudden you're in a position where it's Eric Gordon and Trevor Ariza and Clint Capella and PJ Tucker that are having to pick up the slack, and that's obviously a pretty major difference.
I mean, too, you know, ever since after game one, the Rockets have pretty much been playing about 6.5 guys.
Yeah.
You know, Gerald Green's been playing about probably 12, 13 minutes a game. So he doesn't even, I mean, you know, if he gets hot, he stays in there a little longer. But
right.
if he's just chucking up bricks, they're getting him out of there pretty quick. So they're not deep to begin with these past couple games. So someone's obviously going to have to step up off the bench, and because they're going to have to play more than seven guys in this next game.
And two, I mean, James Harden hasn't exactly been tearing it up either, you know, the guy who's the presumed MVP of the league, and he had a good game one, but other than that, he's been really inefficient, has been terrible from the three-point line. I mean, if he plays the way that he's played here in the last several games, they're going to get ran out of the gym in game six.
Yeah.
I feel pretty confident in saying that.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. I was honestly, I didn't get to see a lot of game four, but from what I did see, I was pretty shocked that Houston was able to pull that out. You know, Golden State, they just, you know, that's the interesting dynamic with Golden State with this, you know, since adding Kevin Durant, they've never really faced this type of adversity in meaningful games. And it's kind of, the question's kind of coming to light now of, being legitimate, who is the go-to guy?
Right.
You know, in that game four, Kevin Durant throws it to, you know, or, you know, that ends up in Klay Thompson's hand, and he just kind of has to turn, you know, chuck up a turnaround shot. Mm-hmm. And
well, and then even in game five, they're going to Draymond, like, on the biggest play of the game.
Yeah.
You know?
You know.
And I think that Draymond's a good player, but in that situation where he's running at full speed down the court and you're trying to throw it to him on the move, that was just kind of questionable to me. I was like, what did you think he was going to be able to go do with that at that point?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, watching the replay, if they were trying to just get the ball ahead to him and just get him a straight line drive to the basket, is kind of what it looked like they were trying to do, but I'm not for sure. But yeah, you know, just out of all the options that they had on the floor, you'd think he's probably about number four.
Right.
So that was really interesting. But no, yeah, it really is an interesting question of, in these meaningful games, who do the Warriors trust the most to make a play? I mean, sometimes not just having one guy to go to can almost work against you, and you know, like those guys not necessarily knowing who is going to be who's getting their number called.
Well, yeah, I mean, you think about the Cavs in a game like that, you know exactly where the basketball is going at the end of the game. The Rockets are maybe a little bit different. I would usually err on the side of James Harden, but I think that either one of those guys is a pretty solid option. When it's like one or two options rather than four, you know, like I think that's a big difference, because then when you've got those four guys, it's just like everybody is more likely to defer, whereas when you got the Rockets, you only got two. It's like James Harden's probably like, okay, I'm going to try and do my thing, and if I got to pass to Chris, then that's cool.
Right.
You know? But those guys are like, what, they catch the ball, and it's like, oh, wait, should I do my thing? Should I pass it to Clay?
Yeah.
Should I pass it to Steph? Like, there's just so much more room to overthink things. And that's something I think is kind of interesting about the Warriors right now, where, I mean, I think everybody agrees that they're like one of the great accumulations of talent ever. But we are seeing a trend with them, especially this year, where they were so complacent during the regular season, and now you get into some of these close games and you get into some of these, you know, adversity situations where they're going back and forth between a good game and a bad game and a good game and a bad game. And then this is really the first time that they've had bad game. And now you're all of a sudden up against the ropes, and who knows how they're going to respond to that based on the fact, like you said, they haven't seen adversity like that in a long time.
Right. Yeah. I mean, honestly, I couldn't even tell you the last time they've faced adversity like this since they got Kevin Durant.
I don't know that they ever have since they faced Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant.
The last time the Warriors have really faced true adversity is being down 3-1 to Oklahoma City, playing against Kevin Durant. So,
well, and then even kind of trying to play chase in game seven against LeBron. I mean, really, that's the only time. And even then, like, they were in control of that game up until the block.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And that was the same thing, though. I think you could see, even in those 2 years before Kevin Durant got there, I think there was always some question of, like, who is the one that we're going to trust in the final moments?
Yeah, yeah.
Steph's, like, 0 for his last 6 on shots that he takes in the last 24 seconds of a game.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think this is just also kind of maybe shining some light on people, you know, how great LeBron actually is.
Right.
You know, obviously the LeBron Jordan debate's going to go on forever, and I'm not even going to touch that. But just, you know, the fact that some of the plays that guy makes at the end of games are just incredible, and just a team as great as the Warriors not being able to execute like that down the stretch just, you know, kind of shines some light on how great LeBron is at the end.
All right, so going into this game six tonight in Oakland, who do you think is going to come out with the win? I mean, I think it's tough to go against the Warriors after losing two in a row.
Yeah, I think Golden State's going to win. They're playing at home. They're going to play a lot better. And, I mean, honestly, I kind of agree with Steve Kerr. He says he's not worried, and I think part of that's just, you know, playing to the media, you know, like all those coaches do, just kind of appealing to their team through the media. Just, you know, I'm not concerned. I think he's just trying to keep the mood light. But I really don't think he has a lot of concern. You know, even in the other night when they got beat, I mean, they were right there and had a chance to win. And I mean, they'd really tell you that they didn't play that great of a game.
Right.
They were right there.
See, and I think that's where you mentioned that, I think that they at the same time should be a little discouraged, because I don't think Houston played their best game either.
I agree with that.
And to see them come out and get a win when they definitely don't have their A-plus game.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like – that's all – that to me was a wake-up call where it's like, man, like this thing – might really be able to happen.
Yeah,
you know?
No, I agree 100%. I think honestly too, and myself included, there's been too much talk about just the Warriors not playing well.
Yeah.
When you look at the box score and look at the statistics, I mean, they really don't. It doesn't look like they played horrible. I mean, you've got to give a lot of credit, honestly, to, you know, the defense that Houston's playing, just switching everything. I mean, the Warriors are turned into an isolation team.
Right.
And that's just something that we've really never seen from them. You know, they're known for, you know, throwing the ball around and making the extra pass and getting all these open threes. Whereas in this series, the way that Houston's defending them and switching,
yeah,
they've really turned Golden State into an isolation team, which is exactly what Houston wants. And I think they deserve a lot of credit.
Well, I think Houston, I mean, that's the way Houston plays. So if you're playing that way, then you're playing straight into their hands, you know? And I mean, it's well documented. You think about what James Harden can do as a defender, and there's nobody on that Houston team. I mean, Capella's a solid defender. Trevor Ariza's a solid defender. Chris Paul's okay. But there's nobody on that team that's like a lockdown guy who's going to be like all NBA for like defensive team.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, exactly.
And he's like – or so what they've been able to do as a team to force him into those ISO situations, it allows guys like James Harden, who maybe isn't as adept of thinking defensively – he's not scrambling around like he would be if the Warriors are moving the basketball the way they have previously. And then you end up with just better rotations and better matchups where James Harden's not getting matched up on Kevin Durant or something like that, or going to get crossed up by Sean Livingston for a dunk.
Yeah, yeah, no, 100%. And that also, too, it kind of flipping it back to the how the Warriors are defending. I know, you know, they're pretty set on they're going to switch everything as well.
Yeah.
And
I think that's a bad move, though, personally.
Yeah. No, that's what I was just going to go into is the Rockets, you know, are just going to say, okay, well, if you're going to keep switching everything, we're just going to set ball screens and get our best players with Steph Curry guarding them, and we're
right.
just going to attack him the entire game. And
it's interesting. It's crazy to watch Steph Curry try and defend screens, like, as the defending – when he's guarding the screener. Because he will just grab a hold of the guy like setting the screen
yeah.
and try and not let them go set it.
Yeah.
And it's just like, man,
yeah,
they're really just going to let him do that.
He's trying to avoid that switch, but Golden State's committed to switching everything. And I just think another thing, too, that's interesting as well is just, you know, the five spot for Golden State's been a big problem, especially with Iguodala mm-hmm. out playing, you know, the death lineup. They're not able to play that. And it's kind of surprised me a little bit that they went with more Kevon Looney over Jordan Bell.
Yeah.
Just because I think Jordan Bell gives them a little bit more versatility.
Well, and more, I think that not being able to play the lineup of death like hurts them the most is that when we've seen them at their best, they're playing Kevin Durant at the five.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
and he is their rim protector.
Yeah.
And then when you've got Iguodala out and you've got to bring in that more traditional five man or a forward, a Jordan Bell or, you know, even JaVale McGee or whoever,
yeah.
then that puts Kevin Durant out on the outside, and your rim protector, like rim protection abilities, go way down as well.
Right,
and like that's not what people generally think about with Kevin Durant, but he is like one of the elite rim protectors in the league.
Yeah,
you know?
It also shows you that Golden State doesn't really have a guard necessarily off the bench that they truly trust at the end of games. I mean, last
yeah.
night they went with Livingston, but outside.
I mean, what do you think about Quinn Cook taking the last shot?
I mean, you know, honestly. Me personally, I was okay with it. You know, he's a 44% 3-point shooter in the regular mm-hmm. season.
Well, and that's what he's in there to do.
He's wide open,
he's got
to shoot
it.
The ball.
Yeah.
And, you know, hindsight's perfect. I saw the video going around of, Steph Curry was, you know, rotating to the top of the key wide
right.
open. I don't think some people realize how close NBA players can close out.
Well, yeah,
you know,
that's what
quickly.
I was going to say. Yeah.
And
James Harden was there.
Yeah.
And he's still got length, you know.
Right.
So if he's able to cover a couple of those steps, he's still getting a hand in Steph's face.
Right, yes. I mean, me personally, I don't have a problem with the shot.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're going to get much better of a shot than that, especially with the way some of those Warriors' possessions have been going.
Right.
That, like you said, that's why Quinn Cook's in there. He's in there to shoot the ball when he's open.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what he did, and he took the shot, and he missed it.
All right. last thing on this game. If the Rockets are going to win game six, what do they? What do you think they need to do? What's got to happen? I mean, Eric Gordon's going to have a big game, right?
Yeah.
Or somebody like that. PJ Tucker, maybe?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely somebody's going to have to step up. You know, they're losing a lot in Chris Paul not playing, not just you know, not just statistics, but Chris Paul, I mean, he gives them an edge.
Uh-huh.
You know, even though he doesn't have, you know, the biggest knock on him is not being able to win in the playoffs, you know, but he gave him that he gives him a little bit of edge and toughness, and you know, that's got to come from, you know, that's got to be coming from somebody else as well, because like we talked about earlier, Houston hasn't been playing a lot of guys, so someone's gonna have to step up. So, you know, like you said, if it's PJ Tucker or Trevor Ariza, someone uh-huh. like that, someone's got to step up for them to win the game.
If we go to seven, say Chris Paul does play, how do you feel about Houston's chances in a game seven at home?
If Chris Paul plays in game seven and he looks healthy, I think his health is the biggest question. I mean, I like their chances. They've been playing pretty well. Me personally, in a game seven, I'm still taking Golden State.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's hard to bet against four of the 20 best players in the world.
Like, yeah.
Regardless of whether you've got to win one out of two.
Yeah.
You know?
I just think, you know, I think that in the back of their minds, I think Golden State, If they can get Iguodala healthy, they're going to feel good.
Yeah.
And I think in the back of their mind, I saw Iguodala is questionable for game six. I think Golden State feels good about winning game six at home without him, especially uh-huh. with Chris Paul out. So I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't play, or if he does, it's in a very minimal role. I think they want to try to get him healthy for game seven.
Yeah.
And if he plays in game seven, I'm taking Golden State.
Yeah, I mean, I think that either way, I think we're in for two more fun games.
Because
you
I
can
agree.
Clearly see these two teams do not like each other very much.
Yeah. Oh, I agree 100%. I was talking to a couple buddies yesterday and or the other day, and I just said, you know, it's 2-2 series. We're in Houston. Houston's, you know, they got what they wanted. You know, they got a best 2 out of 3 against Golden State, and two of the games are in Houston.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I also thought – I thought the series was over if Houston lost game five.
Yeah,
I thought it was going to be over in six. I didn't think it was coming back. So that was huge that they won. I personally have Golden State taking six in Oakland.
Me too.
I think seven's going to be close in Houston, but I like Golden State.
For sure. All right, switching gears here on the Saturday podcast presented by Iowa Pork. The NBA released its all NBA teams on, what was that, yesterday? Or was that the day before? Tuesday? Wednesday?
Yeah, I don't remember which day.
I think it was Tuesday. Or no, it was Wednesday. Or Thursday. I don't know. I can't remember my days. But I know what the All-NBA teams are. First team was Damian Lillard, James Harden, LeBron James, Kevin Durant, Anthony Davis. James and Harden both were unanimous selections. Anybody stand out to you in that group? Or are you surprised at all? I was a little surprised to see Kevin Durant on the first team, I'll be completely honest.
Yeah, that surprised me a little bit. I think that's partially just, you know, the best player on the presumed best team, even though they didn't have the best regular season. But Damian Lillard surprised me a little bit. It also kind of surprised me a little bit, too, not seeing Westbrook on the first team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody was going crazy last year, and he won the MVP, averaged a triple-double.
I think people aren't falling for that anymore.
I agree with you. I think they're burnt out on that.
Yeah. Well, I don't even know if it's burnt out necessarily as much as it's like it's become clear that the stats thing, like this chasing stats thing,
right.
is pretty real.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. I just think it's kind of, you know, on its face, it's just kind of funny that he essentially did, you know, the same thing as last year.
Right.
And last year he won the MVP, first team all NBA. You know, maybe partially it's because he had Paul George and Carmelo Anthony on his team
right.
that swayed people a little bit. But seeing him land on the second team, I'm not fully surprised. But just if you put it in that regard, it's a little bit surprising.
I think you can make a case for Giannis, too, who was on the second team, for him to be a first-teamer.
Yeah.
Probably in place of Durant, that's who I would have switched.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that.
All right, so this is the rest of the second team is – well, Russ and Antetokounmpo, DeMar DeRozan, DeMarcus Aldridge, and my guy, Joel Embiid.
The earns process.
His first ever All-NBA honors. I think that if going into the season, if someone would have told me that Joel Embiid made second team All-NBA, I would be very happy with that.
yeah. Going into the season, obviously, you know, a lot of things shaped up a little bit differently than we thought. I had one of my buddies actually sent me a screenshot of our texting conversation, and it was me telling him, you know, I actually think Philly's going to make the playoffs next year.
Yeah.
And obviously it happened, but if you would have told me they were a three seed, I would have just said you were nuts. Well, I didn't think there was any way that that would.
And even then, I mean, I think that they were arguably the most talented team in the left in the playoffs,
oh.
or in the East, like
yes.
by the end of the season, you
yes.
know, just with pure talent.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think that's what's so encouraging is that you know that these guys who are super talented are, I mean, I think Joel is like 22 and Ben Simmons is 20 or 21. And that, so then you've got those two guys locked up for quite a long time. And now they've got this experience of playing in these tight series already under their belt just in years one and two. I mean, that's so invaluable for going forward for what they're going to be able to do in that Eastern Conference.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think they're going to be around for a while. Me personally, this is kind of going off into a different rabbit hole. I don't think the LeBron to Philly thing makes a lot of sense.
I don't think so either.
I just think that he and Ben Simmons are very similar players. Obviously, LeBron is, you know, a much better shooter than
right.
Ben Simmons, but both very ball dominant. I just
That's
don't see
what,
how
yeah.
it works. So I think that they, if they went after a different superstar, I think that that's what, you know, maybe like a Kawhi Leonard or
yeah.
Paul George, someone.
See, this is an interesting
like
thing
that.
To go down. I mean, I think that it. I agree with you 100% about LeBron. I was all in on that back in like February when it first started rumbling, but that was before Philly won whatever like 20 of their last 25 or something like that to end the regular season. And if you want Ben Simmons to be your point guard of the future, you want him to be that guy who's going to lead your team here in the next couple seasons. Why would you do anything to take the ball out of his hands, you know?
Right.
And if you're bringing LeBron James in, and I'm Ben Simmons, I'm looking at that, and it's like, isn't that the guy that you guys are saying I'm, like, the next him?
Yeah.
You know? Why bring him here?
Yeah.
And that would kind of be a slap in the face if I was him. I mean, even if LeBron is the best player in the world, and it's like, it's hard to say no to bringing in the best player in the world, that would just – as a young guy, I'd question that. I'd be like, okay, so you don't have that much confidence in me, apparently. You
yeah.
know?
Yeah. No, I mean, that scenario right there with LeBron James and Ben Simmons, that's like the big question mark of Chris Paul and James Harden this mm-hmm. previous offseason of, oh, there's only one basketball. How's this going to work? That's that on steroids.
Right.
The Ben Simmons, LeBron James thing. Because Ben Simmons, if you take the ball out of his hands,
he's
pretty much a non-factor
yeah,
in
worthless.
Any game.
Yeah.
And honestly, same goes with LeBron.
Well, even I think one thing that LeBron does have to his advantage is where if you have Simmons as your point guard, it allows him to evolve a little bit, even going into this next stage of his career where he continued to develop as a catch-and-shoot guy, you know, in the corners. And I think it too allows you to put Simmons in more positions where he's near the basket, which I think is where most people would agree that been at his best. He can post up in that pinch post area that LeBron has made a lot of his success off of. You get Embiid working in the post as well. You can do four out, one in with Simmons and Embiid and LeBron. And then you still got some more shooters to work with as well. I mean, whether that's Robert Covington or JJ Redick or Dario Saric or whoever, or if they would, you know, maybe work some trades and stuff like that to where they could end up with a guy like Paul George or a guy like Kawhi Leonard as well.
Yeah, no, I agree with that as well.
They're going to have to add somebody. I'm confident
yes,
in that. You
yes.
know, like they can't – I think Robert Covington was a major negative for them down the last couple games of the
yeah,
season.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's interesting, too, to think about if the number 10 pick might be on the move,
yeah.
You know, to get someone, you know, to fill that void.
I like Mikal Bridges, dude. We can talk about that again
yeah.
like more in a little bit.
Yeah, we
I like Mikal Bridges a lot. That if they could get him, I think that would be a good move. All right, really quick, the third team. Steph Curry, Vic Oladipo, Jimmy Butler, Paul George, and Karl Anthony Towns. Victor Oladipo, man, I feel like he would have had a case to be second team too.
Yeah.
I think that there's people that could even make a case for him having received MVP votes based on the way he played this season for Indiana.
I'm just most shocked that Oladipo was not on the all defensive team, correct?
Yeah, I think so.
And that surprises me. I mean, you know, he led the league in steals. He had a terrific year. I agree with that 100%. That trade for Indiana just keeps looking better and better.
Right.
Especially, you know, with how everything played out in Oklahoma City this year, and Paul George is
likely going to leave.
Be gone. There's a couple of rumblings of where he might end up, but doesn't sound like he's going to be back in Oklahoma City, which wouldn't be surprising to anybody.
Yeah.
Victor Oladipo is fantastic this year. Looking at the third team as well, the most interesting player right now on that team might be Karl Anthony Towns, in terms of what's happening with him,
with
the reports that are coming out of Minnesota.
Well, yeah, that's what I was just going to say, is that I was going to ask you that. And this is kind of a weird thing, too, where there was only three teams that had multiple guys on the All-NBA teams, the Warriors, the Thunder, and the Timberwolves.
Yeah.
And two of those teams got bounced in the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah.
Obviously, the Timberwolves were slowed down by the fact that Jimmy Butler got hurt.
Yep.
But with Towns, if I'm him and I'm looking at this situation with Tibbs, I don't know that I want to be around there playing 40 minutes a night like what Tibbs is having guys do. And what, after we've seen what happened to all those guys that he had at the Bulls.
Yeah. I just think the biggest thing is you know, Tibbs is he's a great defensive coach. His offense has just not evolved to the current NBA.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's kind of what happened in Chicago, is why they were, you know, never able to advance. I mean, partially, obviously, just because of LeBron. But
I'm Towns, I'm like, man, I want to get the hell out of here and play in an offense that actually can do, like, showcase what I'm able to do.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. Yes. 100%. You know, he's still very young, and I mean, you know, he's one of the best young players in the league, so he's got a lot of leverage.
Right.
And I if I were him, I would do the exact same thing. I would want to play in a system where, you know, I mean, the biggest thing, you know, is cutting back his minutes, because at the end of the day, that's just, in the long run, going to shorten his career.
Right.
So,
all right, quickly, are we confident that these are the 15 best players in the league right now? If when we look on back on this in 20 years, we look at the All-NBA team from 2017-18, will we look at this and be like, you know what, that was pretty close. Like, that, I don't have too many arguments with that.
There's a couple. I think there's a couple.
And I think there's some interesting names in the others receiving votes
category.
I agree.
If you're talking in terms of this year, I think it's pretty close. But if you're looking in a spectrum of years,
yeah.
I think there's going to be some that were missed.
Right.
I think, obviously, Chris Paul not making it.
There's just so many guards.
Right. You know, and like, partially, you know, he was hurt during the year. So,
yeah.
And, you know, you look at a guy like Donovan Mitchell.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he had an unbelievable season as a rookie. You're assuming that he's only going to get better.
Right.
So, if you're looking at if you're looking at just this year, I think
he only got two votes even for the Donovan Mitchell did.
I wanted to touch on that as well. Some of the other players receiving votes is just hilarious.
Dwight Howard,
Trevor Ariza,
Kristaps Porzingis received a vote, and I don't think he played more than like 25 or 30 games.
Yeah, just some of these votes. You know, I mean, Trevor Ariza, great role player. You know, he probably got his vote from one of the Houston writers.
Yeah,
you know,
Steven Adams.
Yeah. Just some of these names on here are just borderline ridiculous. But
see, I mean, I think that there's a better case to be made for Al Horford than there is Rudy Gobert, even.
I mean,
Gobert was good for Utah, and I mean, they obviously wouldn't be as good as they are or as they were without him. But still, I'm just like, man, Al Horford has basically anchored that Celtics team now.
Oh,
If we were doing this in a month and the voting had been a month later, I think Al Horford's on that team.
I think he is, too. I think there's no question, just, you know, what he's brought to this team in the playoffs, because, you know, obviously when this stuff was voted on, people didn't think that Boston would be one game away from the NBA championship with the roster the way that it is right now.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people, myself included, didn't think they would get through Philly.
Right.
you know, Al Horford, he's been great, and he just is able, you know, talk about a big guy that's able to switch and then also step back and hit three-pointers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's been fantastic.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. We'll talk a little bit about the NBA draft here on the Saturday podcast presented by Iowa Pork.
Hello, friends. We'll get you back to the Psycho and Fanatic podcast here in just a minute. This is Chris Williams, and I want to tell you guys about a great experience I recently had. Mine was up at Ames Eye Clinic. Now, the same guys, Dr. Kruger and the crew, are also down in Des Moines, so we've got a lot of options for you here. But I had lunch with Dr. Kruger, and I was telling him about some of the symptoms that I had had. I was having headaches all the time. I felt like I needed like in the back of my neck, it was weird. It was like stiff all the time. I noticed, you know, I was having problems reading up close. It was weird. Went in, had my eyes checked, and sure enough, I had some issues going on that I never even thought of. I never had to wear glasses as a kid. You get a little bit older. They hooked me up with some glasses that I use now when I'm looking at my computer screen all day working here at Psycho and Fanatic. Headaches have not completely gone away, but they've gotten a lot better. If you're like me, you probably haven't had your eyes checked in years. It had been over a decade since I had. Really glad that I went in there. Most insurance, it's going to work because they can code it that it's health. There's a lot of different things that can happen with that. I'd love for you guys to give them a shot. Ames Eye Clinic. It's up on 10th Street. If you are in Des Moines, it's over on 2600 Grand Avenue. They will hook you up. Awesome guys. They're big Cyclone fans and proud supporters of CycloneFanatic.com, and they've helped me a lot. All right, here back today to our newest installment of the Cyclone Fanatic podcast.
All right, welcome back to the Saturday podcast. Jared Stansbury and Austin Hurst, presented by Iowa Pork. Talk about the NBA draft a little bit. The NBA draft combine is over now. And there's, less than a week left until the deadline when college players have to announce whether or not they will remain in the draft or if they will be returning to school. Let's just start there. What's Lindell Wigginton going to do? Is he coming back?
I think he's coming back. I think he's getting these individual workouts with teams and trying to get some good feedback. You know, kind of a guy in his situation too, a lot of times he's brought in to work out against other guys.
Just, yeah.
You know, not to say like a practice dummy, but...
He's not a practice dummy, but he's there to give guys a good look. But at the same time, they might not really be looking at him for this year.
Exactly.
They're just like getting eyes on him for next year.
Exactly. You know? Yep. They're using him because they know obviously he is talented. To get a look at some of the guys that they're more interested in this year.
Right.
I think the consensus is that he's got a lot of room to grow in terms of ball handling and just being a more on guard, on the ball guard. I think the biggest giveaway is, you know, him not being invited to the combine.
Right.
If he was in serious contention to get drafted, he would have been at the combine. So I think with those reasons, he's going to be back. I would be pretty surprised if he's not.
For people that don't know this, you've worked with the Bulls at the Summer League a couple summers. You, as a guy who has been in that scouting world a little bit, what's your scouting report of Lindell? Like, what do you if you're watching him play, what are the things that you're like, okay, this is what he does in an elite level? I mean, obviously everybody knows he's an elite level athlete, and he shoots much better than what I think anybody anticipated him shooting. But then what are the things that it's like, that he needs to go back and, you know, do this and this and like make himself better to where he'll have a better opportunity to be drafted next year? At least in your mind, what do you see?
Yeah, in my own personal opinion, I think the biggest thing is just kind of getting a better idea of his feel for the game.
Uh-huh.
So seeing him on the ball more, making more decisions with the ball in his hands, tightening up his handle, seeing more of him in that type of role. Last year, you know, he was better suited off the ball for the way Iowa State was playing and just in terms of scoring. In terms of an NBA perspective, I think just seeing him making more decisions with the ball in his hand, I still kind of personally question his feel for the game.
Yeah. I think you can, and I think that that's a logical thing to question. When you look at the way when he moved into that point guard spot at the end of the year, he was turning the ball over at a pretty high rate.
Right. And you know? I just think, too, from me personally watching him at the end of the year, you know, when Nick Babb went down with the injury and just seeing him slide over and playing, you know, more true point guard, I still think when I say I question his feel for the game, I just don't. Right now, he just doesn't have great feel on how to play point guard.
Yeah.
You know, he just because he's never, you know, in his defense, he has never really played point guard ever. I mean, Matt Coleman from Texas was his high school point guard. He played off the ball. He's a great scorer. He's just got to find that medium between when to score, you know, when to go get mine, when we need a bucket,
right,
and when to facilitate offense. And I just think that's something that he struggled with. And
I think the game hasn't slowed down yet for him.
Yeah, to some yeah. Extent, I think, you know? I think the game was a lot. The game was a lot slower for him when he was just off the ball, and he's like, you know, I just need a score.
Yeah.
And I mean, he's a very talented scorer. He's a great athlete. He's got a great body. You know, size. I didn't see what he measured anywhere. So you know, he's not really really tall, but he's got a thick body. And he's a good athlete. And I think another thing too is just his defense.
Yeah.
His individual defense was, you know, not great.
It was up and down.
Yeah.
He showed, you know, flashes.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the biggest thing, and, you know, obviously I got a chance to, you know, I watch every single Iowa State game, so I watched him more intensively than, you know, NBA guys. You know, he kind of picked his spots. So, like, when he's playing against Trae Young, Keenan Evans, you know, the bigger name guys in the Big 12, he looks great on defense.
I mean, he was great defensively against Javon Carter and Ames.
Yeah, yeah. You know, the guys where, you know, he knows he needs to get up and play,
yeah,
he was great. It's the other games, you know, when he's guarding guys that, you know, aren't on really anybody's radar and there isn't a lot of eyes on him, you know, getting back cut or even just getting taken off the dribble. I'd just like to see more consistency on the defensive end from him. And then just the offensive end, just showing his feel for the game and really just tightening up his handle and also just continuing to be consistent with his jump shot.
Yeah. I mean, I think if he comes back and he can prove that he's got more of that feel for the game that you're mentioning, he will have a very, very good opportunity to be a first-round pick next year.
Yes, yes, for sure. And, you know, I think – I haven't really looked. I would guess next year, as of right now, he's probably slotted late first round.
Yeah, for the most part.
So he will definitely give himself an opportunity to move up if he shows that he can do some of those things, in my opinion. And I just think I think it would be wise for him to come back.
Yeah, definitely. All right, so obviously the biggest question really starting when you look at the NBA draft is Doncic versus Ayton at the number one pick for the Phoenix Suns. I know you're a big Doncic guy. How do you feel? Is that where the Suns are going to go?
Oh, man. I do not know where the Suns are going to go, honestly. It would not surprise me if they went Doncic, but it wouldn't surprise me if they went Ayton either. And honestly, I think either guy is a good selection. For me, with Doncic, it's all about making sure you're putting him in the right situation.
Yeah.
You've got to put him in a situation where he is on the ball and making plays. That's where he is the most comfortable. He hasn't proven that he's a super consistent three-point shooter, which is going to need to come. Because, you know, he's not an elite athlete by any means, but his decision-making and when he plays with the ball in his hands, he's very good. So a team that lets him play point guard and just facilitate offense and make plays is going to be the best situation for him.
See, and I think what makes him kind of an interesting fit with the Suns, where you get him at the point and you let Devin Booker, you know, kind of roam free as your primary scorer, and Doncic and him are working together to set each other up. And I mean, I think that there's some interesting dynamics you can go with where you're using them in pick and roll situations, pick and pop type situations, with Booker setting a screen or even Doncic setting a screen, you know, with, I mean, he's 6'8", you know, 6'8", 6'9", 250 or whatever it is. So I mean, even if they don't have a traditional big man, is Alex Len like their number one big man right now?
I think so. Honestly, yeah, I couldn't tell you the last time I watched Phoenix play, so I'm probably the wrong guy to ask about that.
No, but. I mean, I don't know that anybody would know the answer truly unless you're like really studying this stuff.
Yeah,
that's why they're getting the number one pick in the draft at this point. Yeah. You know, but yeah, I mean, I think I'd roll with Doncic because I do think the Booker and Doncic dynamic is very intriguing. And I like that more than what you could potentially get with Ayton. I like Ayton. I think that he's going to be a good player. But I think there's a ceiling for what a player like him can be in the NBA right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, it's definitely a guard-driven league. There's no question about that.
And he's not a guy who's going to step out and, like, attack you off the dribble from the top of the key or, like, knock down a three or anything like that. He's purely a pure post.
He's pretty purely a back to the basket guy outside of, you know, stepping out to 15, maybe 16 feet.
Yeah, the Ringer has the player comparisons as Patrick Ewing, Karl Anthony Towns, and DeMarcus Cousins. I don't know that I see the Karl Anthony Towns. I mean, Karl Anthony Towns shoots like 45% from three.
Yeah, I don't see.
So I don't know that I see that, but the back to the basket game, I can see that comparison.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. The back to the basket, I can definitely see that comparison. And, you know, Ayton's a really good defensive player.
Yeah.
If the 3-point shot comes along, he's got a decent stroke for a big man. So if that can develop, that'll definitely help him. But you know, I'm not gonna kill Phoenix if they decide to go with Ayton. It makes, you know, a lot of sense, and there wouldn't be a lot of people that look down on that. But I think Doncic is the most talented player in the draft.
Yeah.
He's been in the Real Madrid system, I think, since he was 13 or 14 years old. Started coming off the bench, I believe, for Real Madrid when he was like 16. So he's been playing at a high level for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, in the Euro League, you know, he was very good. So that's a high level of basketball, and he's just, if he gets put in the right situation, I think he will have success.
All right, so if Phoenix takes him at number one, then does Sacramento come in and draft their 6 millionth center in the last 6 years and take Ayton?
I stopped trying to predict what Sacramento is going to do a while ago.
See, and that's what I'm saying, though. It's like they've got so many freaking centers already that then you just get another guy, and it's like how many 6'11", 7-foot people are you going to put out on the court at one time?
Yeah. I don't know. And if there was a team that was going to do it, it would probably be them. So it wouldn't shock me.
It's one of those things where I think you have to have a very serious debate between fit and best player in the draft, you know? Because I think that Ayton would be the best player available, but I don't think that he would be the best fit for their roster.
Yeah, yeah. No, and, you know, it's kind of, what are you looking to do? Are you looking to build a team, or are you looking to build assets and trade the assets to build a team? If you're looking in terms of, I mean, best fit, I don't know where this guy fits in the current NBA, but like Marvin Bagley would be definitely a guy if I were them to take a look at, because
he's more of a wing.
He would at least give you a different dynamic, you know, than DeAndre Ayton compared to what you have with your, you know, like you said, your six centers on your roster.
Right. Well, at least you look at Bagley. He's a guy who can step out on the wing and attack you off the dribble a little bit. He's got some mid-range game, and he can step out and shoot the three, too.
Yeah, he's one of the more interesting players in the draft to me, just because I don't exactly know what his position is in the NBA.
Right.
But he's, you know, he's like 6'11". He's got a good stroke, like you said. He's athletic. You know, Duke played a lot of zone, so his defense isn't
great.
You're not 100% sure what you're getting there. So that, I mean, he's the most interesting player in the draft to me in terms of I don't really know what to expect. So that's why it would be perfectly fitting in my mind that Sacramento would take him and just try to figure out what to do with him.
Yeah. And I think this kind of just is a side tangent. I would not be at all surprised if we continue to see more and more of these college teams run zone than what we have previously. If you go to a lot of AAU tournaments, That's what those kids are running, is zone all the time.
I would not be surprised, because
there's more and more people coming to college that have never played man defense in
their life. And it's just it's truly hard, especially when, you know, like Duke had so many one and done players.
Yeah.
It's very hard to coach team man defense in that short period of time. As silly as that sounds, you know, you're trying to throw all of these guys together and teach them how to play team defense in a short period of time.
Right.
It's a lot easier to play a zone and teach them how to do that.
Yeah. Well, and in that situation, you can let guys like Marvin Bagley and Wendell Carter and Gary Trent Jr., Grayson Allen, you can let their athleticism just kind of go nuts, you know, because there's a lot more room to gamble and stuff like that. You always have more guys available for helping you than you would in just basic man. And you open the door for guys who are just freak athletes to go out and be freak athletes.
Exactly. And, you know, especially when, you know, you've got a guy at the bottom like Wendell Carter or Marvin Bagley, like someone who's got, you know, Wendell Carter's like 6'10 with, you know, good athlete, long wingspan. Marvin Bagley's like, you know, 6'10, 6'11. Especially when you've got those guys on the bottom that, you know, can provide resistance at the rim.
Yeah.
Like you said, you know, you just kind of let everybody just, you know, be athletes and, you know, see the ball, get your hands up, that type of thing. It's more just reacting rather than, okay, I have to be here. Like, when the ball's over here, I need to rotate over here.
Yeah.
That type of thing.
All right, who's going to be the first Big 12 player taken? Is it going to be Trae Young or Mo Bamba?
I think it's going to be Mo Bamba.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't make it past the top five.
I think it's going to be Mo Bamba. I think his measurables and just what he can do – protecting the I would be surprised if he got out of the top five, to be completely honest with you.
I don't know. He kind of fits in that same mold where I don't really truly know like what he's going to do offensively for you. We saw him step out and shoot a little bit. I think he's got a stroke that can be developed into being a good three-point shooter. But, I mean, I don't know. Outside of being a really tall guy with really long arms that can block shots, like how much more do we – like what's his ceiling? You know what I mean?
Right.
Is he a guy that is going to be just a – rim running shot blocker, or is he going to be someone who can step out and be like a featured offensive player?
Right. And I think teams are going to take him, you know, whoever drafts him, I think they're going to take him based on, I think they think he has a pretty high floor.
Yeah.
Because like you said, at the very least, he's going to be a big guy who can run the floor and, you know, contest shots at the rim, block shots, you know, catch lobs, dunk.
Yeah, and I think that's what makes a guy like Miles Bridges a good pick too, because I think he's gonna have a high floor, but his ceiling might not be that high.
Yeah, you know what I mean? I agree. I think he's a guy who I agree. Yeah, Miles Bridges. I'm not super high on him.
No,
I mean I think he's gonna come in and, you know, be a pretty decent role player.
Yeah, like high end peak. I think that he can be is being like a starting power forward who can knock down some threes and play some solid defense.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And I mean, even
like a Trevor Ariza type guy.
Yeah. And even, you know, in that, he's another guy too, where, you know, what position does he really play in the NBA?
Right.
I mean, Michigan State was trying to play him at the three. You know, that's one of the reasons why he came back, was he was going to play the three so he could prove to everybody that he could play the three, when really, in my opinion, Michigan State was probably a better team when he was playing the four.
Well, I think,
especially in college.
I think even if he plays the four, he puts himself into a position where, yeah, I mean, you look at it and it's like, okay, he probably plays the three in the NBA, but he does whatever is best for the team in that situation. Michigan State should have been in the top group of teams at the end of the year.
Oh.
Like, they should have been a top five team.
Yeah.
With just based on talent.
Yeah, just based on talent. Their talent was
if they go, charts. That's like one of the first times I can ever remember Tom Izzo doing something that was better for a guy's future than what was better for the program in that moment.
Yeah.
You know?
No, I mean,
he should have made Miles play the four. And it's like, if you don't like it, like, we're not going to win.
Right.
You know? And if we win, it's better for you.
Right. And, you know, that's – I mean, even too, I'll probably get killed for this on the message boards, but that's all right. I personally think that, geez, all the years run together now, that Kansas team that was constructed with Frank Mason, you know, as a senior, Devontae Graham as a junior, Svi on the wing, and then you had Landon Lucas, who was kind of the dirty work garbage guy, down low, you know, good defensive player. And then you had Josh Jackson playing the small ball four, came in, you know, wasn't leaned on right away to do a bunch that, you know, I think that's honestly probably about the perfect team constructed to win the national championship that you can have.
Yeah, you know, if you have one and done guys.
Exactly. If you've got an upper-class backcourt that's experienced, that knows how to play and knows how to win.
Right.
And you bring in a talent like Josh Jackson, who at the very least, which is why he got drafted too so high, just at the very least he's going to be an elite wing defensive player. And you know, kind of like with Duke, what Duke went, did with Justice Winslow, played like a small ball four, is kind of what Kansas did with him. That's what I would have liked to see Michigan State do with Miles Bridges, because, you know, from an NBA perspective, I mean, it's either you can play or you can't at the next level. It doesn't really matter in college, like, where you're playing, what position you're playing. Like, obviously, you know, like a guy like Lindell Wigginton, you want to see him play more on the ball. But at the end of the day, it's, you know, can you play at that level or can you not?
Yeah.
And, I mean, just from...
And if you can play at that level, they'll find a place to put you out there and get
find
you on the floor.
Yeah, they will find a place to get you out there.
Yeah.
So, kind of after going off of a tangent there.
Well, that Kansas team lost in the Elite Eight, right?
Yeah, to Oregon.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that was... And they beat Michigan State, I think, in the Sweet 16.
I think second round.
Okay,
I think,
cause yeah, that something was, like that.
Yeah, because they beat Purdue, who Iowa State.
Obviously. Oh yeah, for sure. But yeah, so then I think that the next kind of interesting team to talk about is the Bulls at the number 7 pick. Should they go guard or should they go with another forward? Go back to back years with the forward in the lottery.
See, this. I mean, obviously
they hit with Lori.
Yep, they did hit with him. He's been good. You know, I'm a Bulls fan as well. Obviously, my personal opinion on this Bulls pick, I think you need to draft Michael Porter Jr. if he's there. I just think that it's a big risk, obviously, and his medicals are going to be very important, but if he's available at 7, I think it's worth the risk. That's really, honestly, I mean, outside of like a center, that's really what the Bulls need. You know, they just kind of need a scoring wing.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was, if you talk to, you know, NBA executives at the McDonald's All-American game when he played, it was consensus that he was the number one pick, best player in the draft.
Yeah.
And I think that if you can get that talent out of him, it's obviously a steal at 7, but it's a giant risk. But I think if he is available, I would not be surprised. And that kind of just spiraling off of that, one thing that I've read a little bit about and I would not be surprised, what are your thoughts on the Magic trading? I think they have 6, correct?
Yeah.
I believe they have 6.
Yeah, they do.
Would you be surprised if the Magic traded 6 for the Clippers 12 and 13 picks?
No. I mean, the Magic got a long way to go.
That's,
you know, it, and whereas the Clippers, I think if you move up to 6 and you get a guy who can help you right away, that's a team that's borderline going to the playoffs.
Yeah.
You know.
I think that's exactly my thought process on it is, I don't think the Clippers
the Magic
are that
might
far
as well
away.
Get 2 assets in that time if
exactly.
they can get one.
And you're not know? And you know, for the Magic, that's really not moving back that far.
Yeah.
You're still gonna get you're obviously I think there's a little bit of a talent drop off outside of like 8, 9 maybe. But the Magic I think just needs so many pieces that it would make complete sense to me if they move back to the Clippers back to back picks.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be surprised if the Clippers wanted to move up and get, you know, because I don't, like you said, I don't think they're that far away.
Yeah.
So I think they would see more value in trading both of those picks instead of getting 2 players there to try to move up and get a more, you know, talented, valuable player.
So at 7, both the mock drafts I've looked at here have the Bulls taking Wendell Carter. And you mentioned their need for a center. Do you think that would be a good pick for that slot?
Yeah. I've obviously, as a Bulls fan, I hope I'm wrong. I'm not as high on him as I am on Bamba, Ayton, and Jaren Jackson. I mean, I think he'd be a good pick. I'm kind of interested to see. Obviously, I know he played well when Marvin Bagley was hurt, but I'm still interested to see like what he would, you know, what he's kind of like. I mean, he just, you know, was kind of in the shadow of Bagley all year. And so, yeah, I don't really know. I think, obviously, he's the next best guy available at that spot. So, I think in terms if Michael Porter Jr. is there, I think they need to take him. But if he's already off the board, I think that Wendell Carter is the next best pick for their situation and what they need.
Is there anybody later that could go later in the first round that maybe is a name that, you know, doesn't get tossed around quite as much that you're just like, I really like that guy? Like, just from watching college basketball last year? I've got a couple.
I think, obviously, you know, went off in the national championship, but Dante DiVincenzo is playing himself into the first round for sure. Who do you have? Who do you have? And then come back to me.
I think Khyree Thomas from Creighton is going to be a good player.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a guy who can shoot the three. He attacks the ball well off the bounce, and then he's a really, really good defender. And those guys that are, you know, in the 6'4 to 6'6 range with long arms that can really defend and knock down shots, they're in high demand right now. If you can get a lot of those really athletic guys like that, then you can put a pretty good team out there, especially on the defensive end of the court.
Yeah, I haven't got to see a lot of him, but I know that he's drawn a lot of praise and a lot of people like him. And I think it was maybe last week he just signed with an agent.
Yeah.
So that would, I mean, that would pretty much guarantee to me that he's
I like Kata Bates Diop too.
Yeah,
from Ohio State.
He's interesting for the NBA, but I mean, in college, you know, he's got great size. He can shoot the ball.
Yeah,
that's huge in today's NBA. Another guy that I like, that I was kind of hoping the Bulls could potentially snag at 22, but I think he'll be off the board by then, is Zaire Smith from Texas Tech.
Yeah. Athleticism.
I'm not super sold on his jump shot yet.
Yeah.
It's obviously got to improve, but he's a guy who's got good size. I believe, you know, I think he's like 6'3", 6'3 and a half. Great athlete. And
I'll make a comparison for you with Zaire Smith. He's got a little Russ Westbrook in him.
Yeah, yeah. No,
from the point guard spot.
I can definitely see that. I'd like to – it'll be interesting to see if he's a little bit more on the ball or off the ball. I think, if anything, at first – I mean, you're obviously getting a project with him because he's got to be able to consistently shoot the ball. But, you know, a guy that can come in and, you know, defend right away at that level, I think adds value, especially later.
Yeah, later in the first round.
Later in the first round. There's a lot of just – you know, looking at a lot of the mock drafts, seeing where guys are going to go. One guy that I actually really like, that he's kind of been projected all over, and I would not be surprised if he actually ends up in the first round, is Shake Milton from SMU.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he's like kind of a combo guard. He's got great size. He's like 6'6". You know, he can shoot the ball, and he's athletic, and he's long. And I think he's a guy that kind of earlier in the process, I think he was more slated, you know, somewhere between, you know, like 35, 45, somewhere around there, early second round. I would not be surprised to see him
in the first round. I wouldn't be surprised either. I think he's – yeah, I like that thought. I think there's a lot of guys who are later. This is a deep draft. Like, the guys who can really be stars, I don't think is super deep, but I think there's a deep amount of guys who have the potential to be contributors. You know, there's been a lot of years recently where you get into the late half of the first round, into the second round, and you look at it and it's like, okay, none of these guys are ever going to help an NBA team, you know. And this year, I think there's some guys who could go into that second round that we could see helping teams in the next couple seasons, like Jordan Bell type guys.
Yeah. No, there's a lot of guys. I mean, just even right now looking at, you know, mock drafts of guys. I mean, like Hammy Diallo from Kentucky.
Yeah.
They've got him right now as 55. I mean, that guy's a freak athlete.
Long arms.
6'5". He's another guy who's a huge project, but, like, if he actually went at 55, that's
a steal.
That's fantastic value because, I mean, chances are a guy at 55 is not going to make the league anyways.
Right.
I think that guy's got as good of a chance as anybody at the end to make the league.
Right. I mean, he was a borderline lottery pick, like, coming out of high school.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, he went to the combine last year. He enrolled at Kentucky halfway through the year and redshirted, went to the combine, and at the very last minute pulled his name out. There was a lot of people that thought he was going to keep his name in. Uh-huh. And obviously, hindsight's perfect. Probably should have because – he probably would, especially, you know, with the uncertainty of him, probably would have went.
Letting people get their eyes on him more.
Exactly.
Almost hurt him.
Exactly. And, but, I mean, if you got him at 55, I mean, I think he's – the upside, I mean, is there for him to possibly be a contributor. But, you know, when you get that late in the draft, there's not much risk because a lot of those guys won't make or stick in the league anyways. So
for sure.
It's pretty much just, you know, kind of throwing it out there and, hey, you know, let's take a flyer on this guy and see if he can, you know, ever contribute or crack the rotation even. So
definitely. All right, man. That's good stuff. We'll get you back on after the draft and we'll go through and we'll see if we can find some gems and stuff like that from after all these guys get picked.
Yeah, that sounds great to me. I had a blast.
Definitely. Thanks for coming in, man. I really appreciate it. I'm sure everybody enjoyed it. I hope you enjoyed your experience as well.
Oh, had a great time. Appreciate you having me.
For sure. Thanks again to Iowa Pork for being the presenting sponsor of this week's Saturday podcast. Have a great Memorial Day weekend, everybody. Stay safe out there, and we will talk to you guys again on Tuesday. Peace.